Today is Friday, April 3rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the number of cases of COVID-19 worldwide hits a grim milestone. Escalating cases in the U.S. and a growing shortage of supplies could mean catastrophe.
A person comes in and needs a ventilator, and you don't have a ventilator, the person dies. That's the blunt equation here.
Also ahead, big-time donations and bedtime stories from an iconic country singer. It's all on today's International Edition. Global coronavirus cases surpassed 1 million on Thursday, with more than 51,000 deaths as the pandemic surged in the United States to at least 235,000 confirmed cases. It's the most worldwide. An estimated 80% of Americans are under orders to remain at home, while many fear being infected if they leave to buy food or other necessities. With an urgent need growing daily, U.S. President Donald Trump on Thursday announced a new website for retired healthcare workers to sign up to volunteer.
If you're in an area that isn't so affected, and you're a doctor, a nurse, a healthcare worker, please get to that website, and we would really appreciate your help. New York City needs it. Louisiana, by the way, needs it. Michigan needs it. Whatever you can do, those are very strong hotspots. They need help.
In New York, hospitals and morgues are becoming overwhelmed. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo said Thursday, hospital supply is not meeting demand.
If you wanted to be safe, you'd say like 350. 350 people come in every night who need a ventilator.
He says at the current rate, the state will run out of ventilators, meaning there won't be enough for the number of people who need them, which Cuomo says is a death sentence.
If the rate of usage, the rate of people coming into hospitals who need ventilators, if that rate continues, in our stockpile, we have about 6 days.
Cuomo warned the misery his state is going through is a grim preview for the rest of the nation. He also complained that states are having to compete against each other for protective gear and breathing machines or being outbid by the federal government. Well, healthcare workers on Thursday at New York's Montefiore Medical Center issued a cry for personal protective equipment, saying they feel abandoned.
Every day when I go to work, I feel like a sheep going to slaughter. My colleagues and I are writing our last will and testament. I'm 28 years old. We fear that we may not survive this pandemic, and yet we show up every day to this hospital to take care of our community. This is a man-made problem, and we need a man-made solution. We are told that they are searching for more PPE. Today, I stand with the nurses to call upon Donald Trump, upon our local and our hospital leadership, to stop looking for PPE that doesn't exist and start producing it. We are past the point of last resort.
We are transmitting the disease to our family members, the patients who are negative for COVID-19, and we are spreading this disease to the community from this right hospital.
On Thursday, the number of New Yorkers killed by the virus climbed by more than 2,300. Meanwhile, one of the Trump administration's most visible faces in the coronavirus fight now has bodyguards after receiving online threats. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
Dr. Tony Fauci's become a target of some Trump supporters who say he's trying to undermine the president with frank talk about the virus. Besides threats, Fauci's also had uncomfortable encounters with admirers. The Justice Department has granted a Health and Human Services Department request to give Fauci a security detail. He tells NBC's Today Show he feels safe.
I've chosen this life. I mean, I know what it is.
Though he says parts of the job are disturbing, he's just forging ahead.
And just put all that other stuff aside.
Maybe the bigger concern for the 79-year-old Fauci now is a hoarse voice after spending every day briefing people on the virus.
I just need to keep my mouth shut for a little while.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
The coronavirus death toll continues to rise in Europe. Italy has the most deaths on the continent with close to 14,000, followed by Spain, where the death toll rose to more than 10,000 on Thursday after a record 950 people died overnight. France surpassed 4,000 deaths in its third week on lockdown. Joining us now for the latest is Paris-based reporter Catherine Field. Catherine, let's start where you are in France. What's the latest?
It's very grim, to be honest, here in France at the moment. Every night, the government gives out the latest figures, and the number of deaths are still rising. Just on Wednesday, another 509 deaths. That was after Tuesday, 499 deaths. So it's every day the numbers here in France keep going up, as well as the number of people infected. And it is a shock to people that these numbers do go up, because we've now had 2 full weeks of this lockdown. So it's tough. It is struggling to keep going, particularly in the east of the country, where there has been this enormous cluster, where you do have thousands and thousands of people with the virus. But really, at the end of the day, we're looking at a total number of cases that are now well beyond 50,000, and no end in sight. I mean, the Prime Minister addressed Parliament today, and he said he just does not know when this is going to end, and couldn't even give any sort of guidelines as to how it will end. He said it could be that some parts of France that aren't affected by the virus will come out of the lockdown and others will stay in the lockdown. We may stay in the lockdown for longer. It may be lifted. We may come back. So it's still an area where they're just not sure which way the wind is blowing.
What about the EU, the European Union? How are members dealing with the crisis as a major collaborator here of all these nations?
The European Union did struggle to coordinate anything at the start. It didn't seem to know how to react. But it does seem to be getting itself organized. The main issue for the European Union at the moment is still the repatriation of EU nationals. I mean, it's so far been using its offices in 142 countries to get those EU nationals home. It's put aside 45 million euros to be able to pay for those flights. Some of them, of course, have been especially chartered flights. Others have been commercial flights. So we're looking at something like 250,000 European Union nationals have come back. That was one of their big areas, was repatriation. When it comes to looking more at the future, it has been more focused, or is becoming more focused, in particular, how is Europe going to pick itself up at the end of this? What is it going to do? What sort of funding should be there? So they are now looking at economic recovery, where the money will come from, how long will it take, whether it'll be a 5-year budget or a 10-year budget. So they're looking at that longer term. But as for right now, just having a look at what they're going to be discussing this week in Brussels, there's the big problem of seasonal workers in agriculture. Up until now, people were moving around Europe quite freely. Seasonal workers would come and work. The European Union has said that these workers have now got to be classed as critical, because we're coming into a time when there's going to need to be harvesting, planting and tending the crops, ensuring food safety. Because as we go further, Europe, even though it has got very fertile areas, it's got a lot of crops, getting them into trucks, onto trucks, moved around into stores is going to be very difficult.
Do they have any plans for when things do start to get back to normal, how they plan to help businesses and others get back on their feet?
One of the suggestions that's come from the European Commission head has been this short-term work scheme, which was used in Germany at one stage. What it is that people will just go back to work for a few days a week, and then that would build up. So rather than just coming right in and working a five-day week, that perhaps companies could just gradually ease their workforce in. The thing is about that scheme, when it was used in Germany, the government was paying part of the workers' wages to help out the businesses. So that scheme is one of those that they're looking at, and that could well avoid any mass layoffs right across the block.
That's Paris-based journalist Catherine Field. Meanwhile, in an online conference in Copenhagen, the World Health Organization's health director for Europe, Dr. Hans Kluge, said figures show more than 95% of people who have died on the continent have been over 60. Still, he warned, young people need to also take this virus seriously.
Young people are not invincible. 10 to 15% of people under 50 have moderate to severe infection. Severe cases of the disease have been seen in people in their teens or 20s, with many requiring intensive care and some unfortunately passing away.
Kluge also stressed that the elderly especially need to be extremely cautious. The United States is working with African governments to help them contain the spread of the novel coronavirus in their countries. What happens in the next few weeks in both parts of the world could be critical. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
The impact of the coronavirus on Africa depends on what happens over the next month, says Dr. Zhang Nkengasong, director of the continent's Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
We project that in the next 3 to 4 weeks, we'll begin to see a clearer picture of where this is taking us to. And why is that so? Because we expect that by the 3rd to 4th week from now, the virus will begin to seed into different communities or sub-communities. For example, the most vulnerable populations in slums around capital cities or even expand to remote areas. So I think we begin to understand how severe this pandemic will be.
And that depends, experts say, on how well residents observe measures meant to control the virus's spread. Lockdowns have been declared around the continent as cases mount, including in South Africa, Botswana, Rwanda, Zimbabwe, Uganda, Mauritius, and some larger cities in Madagascar, Ivory Coast, Nigeria, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Other countries have imposed travel restrictions and other regulations aimed at stopping the infection from spreading. Dr. Meredith McMorrow, a medical officer in the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's Influenza Division, says it is essential that people respect the restrictions.
We have a limited amount of time to prevent widespread circulation of this virus in communities. And so the best thing that we can all do right now is practice good hand hygiene, social distancing, take care of ourselves. I think that the challenge is obviously in areas where perhaps there are limited resources and not every person can do that on this continent. And in those areas, then that's where government needs to step in and try and assist people that perhaps can't self-isolate.
The African region, which reported its first case only in February, currently has just over 6,000 reported cases, Nkengasong said. But McMorrow says lags in testing probably mean there are many more cases than have been reported.
So yes, it is likely that the currently reported laboratory for confirmed case counts are a gross underestimate of the true burden of COVID-19 disease because of the issues that you've highlighted. Sometimes it is, as far as the actual burden, it's difficult to estimate because the symptoms of COVID-19 are very similar to other viruses and they're very nonspecific. It is somewhat reassuring that we haven't seen or heard of large increases in severe respiratory illness in this time.
Dr. Nkengasong notes that even as governments close ranks around their people, this fight is not restricted to one country or even one continent. It's the world, he said, that's in this together. But the doctors hasten to add, keep a safe distance. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Iran says its death toll from the coronavirus has surpassed 3,000. President Hassan Rouhani is also saying that the U.S. missed the opportunity to improve relations with Iran by lifting economic sanctions. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Workers traded insults with angry worshippers Thursday as they welded shut the doors of a famous Shiite religious shrine in the city of Shiraz. The Iranian government has officially closed mosques and religious seminaries and suspended Friday prayer services to stop the further spread of the coronavirus. Official government figures put the death toll from the virus at more than 3,000 people, with over 50,000 people infected. Iranian opposition sources, however, say the death toll has topped 15,000. VOA could not independently confirm the numbers. Khatar Abu Diab, who teaches political science at the University of Paris, tells VOA that anecdotal evidence indicates in some parts of Iran the situation is catastrophic. He says that in one Kurdish village alone in Khuzestan province, reports indicate the virus situation is horrendous. He says the Iranian government delayed action on the virus for political and religious considerations at the outset of the crisis, compounding the problem. However, Iranian government coronavirus task force head Ali Reza Zali told state TV that residents of Tehran were to blame for the spread of the virus because they didn't heed official warnings. He says the carelessness of some citizens in Tehran led to the high infection rate in all parts of the capital. He says that if everyone had taken proper hygienic measures and stayed home, the virus would not have spread so widely. Pictures on social media show Iranians who are laying in the streets dead or close to dying due to the effects of the coronavirus. Arab media showed amateur video of reported riots in Sepidar, Adlabad, and Shaiban prisons over deteriorating health conditions. Some prisoners reportedly escaped. On Wednesday, President Rouhani blamed the U.S. for missing what he called a historic opportunity to improve relations with Iran by lifting economic sanctions on his country. He added that the sanctions have failed to deter our efforts to combat the coronavirus outbreak. Frictions between the U.S. and Iran over threats by pro-Iranian militia to attack U.S. forces in Iraq prompted President Donald Trump to warn Iran not to launch an attack, but to instead give him a call.
They're having a hard time picking up the phone, or they're having a hard time setting up the meeting, but they could fix their country pretty easily. And we don't want hostility, but if they are hostile to us, they're going to regret it like they've never regretted anything before.
Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps Commander General Mohammad Bagheri, Chief of Staff of Iran's Armed Forces, told state TV Thursday that Iran is watching U.S. military moves closely and that the slightest action against Iran's security will be met with a strong defensive response. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Here are some of the other top stories we are keeping an eye on at VOA. A U.S. congressman is calling on the State Department to urge China to investigate the disappearance of three Chinese citizen journalists who sought to expose the impact of the coronavirus on the Chinese city of Wuhan. According to media reports, the three went missing after taking videos and publishing them online, including images of overwhelmed hospitals and corpses piled in a minibus. The World Bank said its board of executive directors approved an initial $1.9 billion in emergency funds for coronavirus response operations in 25 countries and said it is moving quickly on projects in 40 additional countries. And Russia sent the United States medical equipment on Wednesday to help fight the coronavirus pandemic. U.S. President Donald Trump, struggling to fill shortages of ventilators and personal protective equipment, accepted President Vladimir Putin's offer in a phone call on Monday. Stay with VOA for all the latest on the coronavirus pandemic. With the coronavirus death toll mounting in the U.S., the presidential election in November of 2020 is now shaping up potentially as a referendum on how President Donald Trump is handling the COVID-19 pandemic. The president has not shied away from being political during this time of national crisis, and his campaign is seeking to capitalize on the image of the commander-in-chief holding daily White House coronavirus briefings. White House correspondent Patsy Wuttakuswara has this story.
As the pandemic ravages the country, President Donald Trump is trying to project an image of a strong leader in control at a time of crisis, holding almost daily televised briefings from the White House.
We're at war with a deadly virus. Success in this fight will require the full, absolute measure of our collective strength, love, and devotion.
Recently, Trump bragged about the ratings of his press briefings on Twitter, prompting some observers to criticize the president for politicizing a pandemic. Shannon O'Brien is a professor of political science at the University of Texas at Austin.
We shouldn't care what the ratings are for a presidential briefing. And he seems more interested in how he's doing in the ratings than he is how many deaths are occurring in the states.
Now that the Trump campaign is no longer holding rallies, press briefings have become a substitute.
Trump is certainly using these pressers to advance his own reelection cause. He thinks that putting himself in this position in the homes of Americans every day will produce a rally around the flag effect, because he'll be at the center of this ongoing pandemic. And it has worked to a certain degree. He's gained a few percentage points.
The briefings often include executives of private companies who support the federal government's pandemic effort.
Looks like you're not sleeping well.
Yeah.
Including a pillow manufacturer who will be producing masks and who has voiced his support for Donald Trump.
God gave us grace on November 8, 2016 to change the course we were on.
History shows incumbents have an advantage during times of crisis because they can appear commanding. In Trump's case, he is now getting the highest ratings of his presidency, an opportunity the Trump campaign will try to seize. Now that the Trump campaign is no longer holding rallies, press briefings have become a substitute, said Larry Sabato of the University's of Virginia's Center for Politics.
If he were more disciplined and if he stuck to the facts rather than inventing things, then he would have a better chance of re-election. He's not going to win in a landslide, that's for sure. He needs to win a couple more percent in order to ensure his re-election.
The campaign must also deal with negative ads portraying the president as blundering in handling the coronavirus crisis.
The coronavirus.
This is their new hoax.
The campaign is demanding TV stations stop airing that ad by a political action committee supporting Democratic presidential candidates. Meantime, Trump is likely to continue presiding over the live daily coronavirus briefings, providing a powerful forum to make his case for re-election.
Thank you, everybody.
Patsy Wuttakuswara, VOA News at the White House.
You're listening to International Edition. We'll be right back.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Oh.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA, or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world.
Ah.
Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. With nations locked down and people quarantined in efforts to prevent the spread of the coronavirus, a pair of husband and wife professional dancers are using online classes to help the homebound get some exercise and have some fun. As VOA's David Byrd reports, Oti Mabuse and Marius Yeparea are teaching classes online from their London living room.
Most people know South African-born dancer Ote Mabuse and her husband Marius Yepere from Britain's Strictly Come Dancing television show. Now they are helping people locked in by the coronavirus to learn dances, to get some exercise, and to keep kids active by teaching free daily classes online.
Okay, so let's just try that little bit with music. Once again, if you don't get it, it is absolutely okay.
From the beginning.
Mabuse says because children are out of school and watching the videos on YouTube and Facebook, they decided to incorporate dances from Disney movies, including Aladdin, Jungle Book, Mary Poppins, and others. She told the Associated Press they cater the routines to the audience.
It makes you think. You have to be really, really creative. And so we thought that if we add the theme of Disney to it, or to add any sort of theme that the kids can follow, they could dress up with. If you don't want to dress up, you can wear a color that matches it. If you don't want to wear the color, you can draw us a picture, write us a letter. So it's literally been amazing to find creative ways to keep kids with us interested and always do something at home, because I think it's really important for parents as well. They want to have something that their kids do, and this was one of them.
The creativity extends to changing the living room of their home as well. Mabuse says Yepere came up with the idea of moving their sofas around to make the space look different.
So every week, because we've been doing this for 2 weeks now, every week he's switched the sofa, so it always looks like a different place, and we shoot it from different ways. So that's been amazing.
Ote Mabuse says she has been inspired by the feedback she received from children, parents, and especially from healthcare worker Mina Walsh at Birmingham Children's Hospital, who makes full costumes to go with the dances.
She makes the full outfit. So like there's one where I did Shrek and she had a full donkey outfit. When I did Mary Poppins, she wore the whole thing. And she does the dances for the kids in the hospital. And that's been amazing. And she's like, the kids are so happy. And to offer them something that at least, you know, 11:30, I get to dress up. I'm going to dance with this lady that I see on my phone every single day. That's something that we just wanted to push the positivity and the fun activities at home.
Mabuse's Strictly Come Dancing co-star Karen Hauer and her husband are also posting classes online for families and couples. The dance lessons are not just for kids. Both Mabuse and Hauer offer free classes for adults, including the jive, the cha-cha, and Latin dancing. Ote Mabuse says she always wants to remind people to remain positive, to be safe, and to take care of themselves. In Washington, I'm David Byrd, VOA News.
And country icon Dolly Parton is making a big donation to help fund coronavirus research, as well as taking time out to read children's books online to kids everywhere. The 9-to-5 singer, actress, and philanthropist tweeted on Wednesday that she's donating $1 million to Vanderbilt University Medical Center in Nashville, Tennessee, and working with her charity, the Imagination Library, to read a children's book on YouTube every Thursday for 10 weeks. The Imagination Library provides children free books by mail every month, and the program is available in all 50 states in the U.S. as well as 5 countries.
Just a step on the boss man's ladder, but you got dreams he'll never take away. You're in the same boat with a lot of your friends, waiting for the day your ship will come in.
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Jackson Munganye, I'm Lori London in Washington. We thank you so much for listening. Please take care and be well. You.
This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil.